Me and Lloyd, day one, we're gonna find out about Eric Morse's goal. On the road again.
This is Lloyd Newman, and I'm in the 10th grade at Phillips High School.
And this is Lee Allen Jones, and I'm in the 11th grade at King High School.
Back on the scene at the Ida B. Wells Housing Development.
One abandoned building, two abandoned building, three abandoned, four.
With a tape recorder and microphone.
Let you hear sounds of the ghetto.
Rap,
man.
Walking around the neighborhood with our equipment. Everyone figured we must be rap singers.
Nah, I ain't know what I'm saying. I'm a reporter.
What y'all doing that for?
Talking about Eric Morse, little boy that got through out the window over there. All right. I'm not a singer.
Thursday, October 13th, 1994. Eric Morse, 5 years old, was dropped out of a 14-story window by two other boys because Eric wouldn't steal candy for them. They were just 10 and 11 years old.
It happened in my backyard.
I can see the building from my house.
It was big news here in Chicago.
Topping our news, tragedy at a Southside housing project. Cops say late
a
last night...
A five-year-old boy refused to steal candy, so he was pushed from the 14th floor.
A short life, a tragic death for five-year-old Eric Morse.
Neighbors say it was a horrifying sight.
The cycle of kids killing kids seems to be escalating out of control.
Just when you thought you'd seen it all when it comes to juveniles and crime here in Chicago, now comes this...
People all over pointed to Eric's death as a symbol of everything that's gone wrong with the neighborhood like ours.
Even the president got into the act.
What do you think about those two kids, 10 and 11 years old in Chicago, that threw that five-year-old boy out the window? A five-year-old kid who knew right from wrong, lost his life at the age of five because he wouldn't steal candy, because he knew right from wrong.
The whole country was shocked by the incident, at least for a week or two.
But then the cameras and the reporters left, and we were all still here, left to ponder another war story in the hood, the lost life, the spreading violence.
For kids growing up in this neighborhood, it was nothing new, and it wasn't surprising.
I know lots and lots of people that's been killed, just part of day-to-day life in the Ida B. Wells.
But this time, we decided to take a closer look at the incident, to talk to people involved, the neighbors, friends, and families of Eric Morse and the two little boys that killed him.
For a year, Lee Allen and I traveled our hood, looking into the murder of Eric Morse.
We call our documentary, Remorse. We began our taping a year ago, and decided to start right at the top with Vince Lane, who was then the chairman of Chicago Housing Authority.
He met us at the building where the crime took place.
We are now standing at the site where Eric Morse, a young man that was threw from the 14-story window. Chairman Lane, this is 14 stories. To a young person living in this community, I mean, it looks dead. You know, you have one abandoned building that looks like a 14-story cemetery. If you lived in this community and you were a young person, what would you be your thought of living here?
My thought would be it would be hell. And my thought would be, because I am a dreamer, I'd dream all of the time about green grass. I'd be dreaming about playing basketball, and I'd be dreaming about going camping. But I certainly wouldn't be dreaming about staying here, where you gotta literally look over your shoulder every waking moment.
You're gonna now walk upstairs to the 14th floor.
How you doing?
3833 South Langley is one of four high-rise buildings in the Ida B. Wells. One of the high-rises is completely boarded up. The rest are mostly vacant. The buildings are tall, red brick, and dirty.
They look like prisons. The outdoor walkways on each floor are all caged in with steel mesh.
We are now walking in.
Inside, the building is dark, cold, and ugly. Concrete everywhere.
There's a lot of graffiti, and it smells real bad.
We're now entering the elevator.
This is not working.
The elevator is not working.
There's always time to kill in these buildings, waiting for the elevators. So we have plenty of time to talk.
Could you please tell me the story of Eric Morse?
Eric was the victim of two young people who didn't have anything else to do. Their fathers were both incarcerated. Mother.
Everyone in the neighborhood knows the story. Eric's death involved four kids, two victims, Eric Morse and his 8-year-old brother Derek, and two assailants.
We'll call them Johnny and Tyrone since they're minors.
John and Tyrone tried to get Eric to steal candy with them. Eric told on the boys, and they decided to seek revenge. On October 13, 1994, Johnny and Tyrone saw Eric and his brother outside of this building and asked them if they wanted to see their clubhouse, which was actually a vacant apartment on the 14th floor. The four shorties,
that's what we call little kids,
went upstairs. They pulled off the boards covering the entrance to apartment 1405 and went inside. Johnny and Tyrone grabbed Eric and held him out of a window. Derek grabbed his brother's arm and pulled him back in. But Johnny and Tyrone took Eric to a second window and held him out. Derek grabbed Eric again, but this time, one of the boys bit Derek's hand. Derek had to let go, and 5-year-old Eric Morris fell 14 stories.
14.
Derek ran out of the apartment, down 14 flights of stairs, in an attempt to save his brother.
He said he thought he could catch him before he hit the ground.
Eric was pronounced dead 10 minutes later.
We're on the 14th floor. This is not a penthouse view. Right off in the distance, you can see the Stateway Apartments. You see a liquor store. You see two or three liquor stores.
And the other part of this view is, if you look at the young people who are on the street, who basically have nowhere to go, they're there now, and 3 hours from now, they'll be there. And that's the difference between a healthy community. People in healthy communities have things to do, positive things to do. People in public housing have nothing to do.
Excuse me, I want to bring some of the tenants in. Excuse me. What would be one thing you would like to say to Chairman Lane of the CHA about living in these homes?
It's just not a fitting place to really live. Look at the rats how they running through it. I mean, not just mice, rats. In my apartment right there, I sit up in my bed and I watch rats just run over the floor, don't give me no respect or nothing. Like I say, this is not a fitting place for a human being to live.
Young man. Excuse me, sir, what is your name?
Cedric.
How do you feel living in this community?
I don't want to live in here.
Where would you like to live?
Anywhere except around here.
What is so bad around here that makes you not want to live around here?
Maybe shoot.
How old are you?
12.
12 years old. Do you know about Eric Morris?
Yeah.
Did you know Eric Morris?
Yeah.
Do you know the kid that did it?
Yeah. Everybody want to beat them up.
Did it feel that could happen to you?
Yeah.
Do you know who this man is standing here? You know he's the chairman of all of this. What would you like to say to him?
Ha.
The next day, Lee Allen and I went back to the building without Chairman Lane and his crew to check it out for ourselves.
Where you want to start from? First to the top?
The top to the bottom.
All right. One vacant apartment, two vacant apartments, all these vacant apartments.
We knew it was going to be tough getting interviews.
People in the projects are suspicious.
Knock on the door.
Lloyd Newman with NPR. We'd like to ask you a few questions about Eric Morris.
You sound like the law, man. You better chill that out. You're going to get a Mossberg in your chest. We're doing a story on Eric Morris. Y'all better throw him off the 14-story window.
Honey, I don't know nothing about that poor little child. I just heard about it. That's all bad.
All right, thank you.
But we had no idea it was going to be this tough.
Lloyd Newman with NPR. Can we ask you a few questions about Eric Morris?
Like I'm busy right now. I don't have the time
to... National Public Radio.
You doing what now?
No, I'm not interested in interviews.
Oh, man. Anybody home? Anybody home?
Most of the apartments were vacant anyway.
Ghost time.
So we had plenty of time to think about Eric Morris.
What was that yelling?
Man, shorty fell from way up here.
Way up here, dog.
Way
ooh.
Up here.
Oh, now he fell far from 14 stories. What the hell have been going through your mind?
I don't know. I would just be thinking about how I'm going to land and if I'm going to survive. I'd be thinking about how it is in heaven. But I know I won't have that much time to think.
Man, I don't know what I could have been thinking about. I would have just probably said a prayer or something. That's all you could have said. God forgive me for my sins. Amen.
since Shorty was so young, and you think you know he went to heaven, cause you know.
Yeah.
Dude, you think they got a playground in heaven for them shorties?
Nope. There's no playground in heaven for nobody.
I don't know, man. How you figure ain't no playground in heaven for little kids?
And ain't God ain't make it special for nobody.
But man, what Shorty gonna do up there? He wasn't old enough to do nothing bad enough to go to no hell. Shit.
Nope.
So what could he do up there?
I gotta think about something. Well, he couldn't do nothing up there.
What are you doing? Just kicking it? Or is he reincarnated into something? Maybe he a little bird or something.
We came back to the building Eric Morse was dropped from over and over again, trying to get interviews. On the 7th floor, finally some luck. We knocked on the door covered with graffiti.
It's Lee Allen Jones from nothing.
It was a kid who answered.
His name was Isaac, a little kid trying to act big.
Hello, we're doing a story with National Public Radio, and we want to ask you a few questions. How old are you, sir?
37.
You're 37 years old, and you're standing like five, how about four left? How old are you for real, sir?
11.
Did you know Eric Morse?
Yeah.
Did you know the people that did it?
Yes, the boy who killed him, he was in my classroom.
What type of kids were they? Were they very, very, very bad?
Yes. When they used to go do bad stuff, I used to go.
You used to go down there and steal?
Yeah.
What did they steal?
I used to steal gold chains and a lot of stuff.
Why did you want to run with that crowd?
Because when you like, you don't have nothing else to do, then you say you probably want to get down with them.
Isaac is short, heavy, and looks sad. He holds an infant in his arms.
Is that a boy or a girl?
A boy.
Would you want that young boy to grow up just like you?
Nope. I'm not gonna be a better person than me.
Like making sure his friends don't die like that.
Yeah, him too. Not just his friends, him too.
Isaac tells us that the baby is 3 days old and belongs to his sister, Tamika.
Could I speak to her?
Tamika!
Tamika comes out to talk to us. When we tell her what we're doing, she tells us that she has a theory about what happened to Eric Morse. She thinks that John and Tyrone were probably trying to scare Eric by holding him out of the window and dropped him by accident.
Them children didn't just do this. You can't tell me they did that. To pick a child up and just throw him out the window, that is cruel, that is evil. An adult would do something like that, but not no children. Who that cruel?
Tamika said that she was close to Johnny, the 10-year-old boy involved in the incident. She met Johnny when he and his family were staying in this building.
We'd already heard about him around the neighborhood. Of the two boys who did this, Johnny was supposed to be the really bad one, a menace.
He had been put on probation just a month before the incident on gun possession charges.
10 years old.
But Tamika says she knew a different Johnny.
I got next to him. And he's not terrible. He needs some love.
We just needed somebody to show him some guidance and some attention.
That's Sandra, Tamika and Isaac's mom.
Ain't no kid that's born bad. A kid only grows to be what they see another person put in them. They can only put out what a person put in them. You know, the only thing he knew was to kick other people around because that's what he got when he was at home.
So the person who you think the dirtiest person, the meanest person in the world, got a side you can get to. You know. Hungry? I'm finna go feed him. I need to eat myself.
All right then.
We walked to the door with Tamika's little brother, Isaac. He was staring out the window while we were talking and looked sad.
When you look out this window, what do you see?
Everything.
Man, do you see good things?
Yeah, sometimes. Like when I don't see nobody out there selling drugs or nothing, that'd be good things. I don't see nobody getting beat up or nothing.
What's the bad thing you see when you look out this window?
People get beat up, shot down. There's people going crazy.
Isaac stood at the door as we walked out into the hallway.
Thank you, Isaac. You've been great, 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 man. You know, and stay strong, man. Don't let nobody get you doing nothing bad, all right?
All right, all
right. Hold the door. That show you how lonely these kids is, man.
Why, because they'll talk.
They just like goddamn M&Ms. They all hard on the outside and all sweet on the inside. I mean, around here, you can't show that sweet.
I saw how he was about to cry.
Yeah, I saw that. And you ready to go? Okay. Let's get this floor and get out of here.
Two sides of the story. at the Juvenile Courts Building in downtown Chicago.
Hello, today we're here with Kay Hanlon, the prosecutor for the Eric Morris case. How you doing, Kay?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Doing fine. We'd like to ask you, do you remember what went through your mind when you first heard this?
The first thing I thought about was, I've been in juvenile court for almost 2 years, and I've seen some pretty horrible things. And the first thing that I could think about was that this is probably one of the most horrible things that I've seen in 2 years. It was almost unbelievable. You know, I mean, I always think that I've seen the worst thing that could happen to people, and you kind of just get on with it, and then this. And I was pretty shocked.
Do you think this could have been a mistake?
No.
Or an accident of some sort?
No. I don't think so. Actually, I'm sure that it couldn't be an accident because of the way that it happened.
Do you feel that these children were bred in a life of violence? Because I live in that community, and it seems to be getting worser and worser and worser every year. Do you think that violence has bred violence into these children?
I certainly think that their backgrounds are different than a lot of other kids. I mean, anybody who commits this kind of crime probably has gone through something in their lives. But then again, I look at other kids. And like you're saying, for example, you grew up in that community. Well, look what you're doing. It's a far cry from committing a first-degree murder. So, you know, I think that it's a part of it. I think it's a piece of it, definitely, that needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed long before I see these kids, because by the time they come to me and I have to prosecute them, the deed's already done. You know, the murder's already been committed, and I think that it has to start long before it gets to me.
All right, thank you, Mrs. Kay Hanlon, prosecutor of Eric Morris' case. Thank you.
After we left Kay Hanlon, we went up one floor in the juvenile courts building to talk to the people on the other side of the case, lawyers with the Juvenile Public Defender's Office. We met with the four attorneys representing Johnny, the 10-year-old defendant, and asked if they thought the kids who committed this crime were influenced by all the violence in the neighborhood.
These people that we represent are exposed to violence. They're exposed to shootings, they see stabbings, they see everything.
This is attorney Dave Hirschbeck.
There's a history of violence that's just so incredible. They see people being shot when they're 2 or 3 years old. You know, they've had relatives who have been shot or killed or whatever. And it's just, yes, does that affect these children? And is that what's going on? I think that's a big part of what's going on.
This is something I said many years ago. I said that, you know, these young kids, you know, if you put their mind state at a young age with the mind state of a Vietnam veteran, they would have very much similarities.
What you're saying is very apropos to what's going on here. You talk about Vietnam, and there's this whole history of traumatic stress syndrome.
Actually, you know, the thing that I've noticed.
This is attorney Rick Hutt.
In all the time I've been here, I've never once seen a kid, and I've seen, you know, we get up to 17. I've seen a kid 16 years, 8 months, 6'1", 190 pounds, carries a gun. His father's incarcerated, his mother hasn't seen anyone. And I've talked to a kid, and within 5 minutes, I see a little boy. A little boy starts talking to me. And yeah, little boys over there who have never had a chance to be little boys. And I don't care what their kids are doing and how big and how mean they want to be. 5 minutes tops, you start talking to little boys.
Oh, yeah.
And every one of them has, you can see, they're all savable.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Yeah. I am not ready to relegate these people to the scrap heap of humanity. I just can't. I'll fight it till the day I die.
Without a doubt.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Let's go.
April 1995. Me and Lee Allen kicking it.
Working on a story. People on the street are still mystified by our tape records.
No, we can't rap. We country singers. We sing country western music.
Rapping?
No, man.
What you doing?
No, I don't rap.
What you doing?
I'm talking about, you know, the little guy that got through our window.
Well, yeah. Them kids, they had never been taught that it don't take much to kill a person. They've been looking at these cartoons, and they thought that
this little boy couldn't die. You know, he gonna fall like at that ground, he gonna die. It ain't right.
Go down and splash, and then next scene, he up there running around, getting chased again.
It couldn't have, a child can have a sense to where they gonna push him right out the window, man. Something had to go through them kids' mind right then.
Everybody in the community seemed to know something about the incident.
We wanted to find out more about the kids involved in the murder. Will we recognize them from around the neighborhood? Who were they? How did they end up in this situation? Hard questions.
We went looking for some answers.
We heard from a lot of people that things might have turned out differently for these kids if someone had just shown some interest in them. The kids were showing plenty of signs of trouble before the incident. Lots of arrests, failing school. They even tried to set their school building on fire. But no one, not their parents, not the school, not the courts, no one seemed to have reached out to them at all.
Then Leala found someone who had tried.
My cousin told me about a friend of his who knew Johnny and Tyrone.
Look for that guy. You said Skuggs. Yeah.
I tracked him down, and he met me in my room for an interview.
Excuse me, sir. What is your name?
Suggs Miller.
What do you know about this Eric Moore story that you can tell the people that want to know?
Well, I'm the president at the Doolittle West Local School Council, and the two young men that did it went to Doolittle, so that I know them both, actually.
Suggs says that of the two boys involved in the murder, he was closer to Johnny, the 10-year-old, the really wild one. When we did the interview, Suggs used real names, so we had to beep them out.
I can remember when he was started school in kindergarten. He came to school once with two bags of rock cocaine. Kindergarten. He gave one to his friend, and he kept one. The friend swallowed his, stuck his in his pants once the teacher saw them, you know. But these kids were, like, at that time, 5, 6 years old, you know. Where did he get it from? It had to be in his household, you know. But when was in school, I could talk to him. He would flare up. He was very sensitive, you know. He'd flare up and fight in a minute. But I could talk to him, and he'd calm down, and he would talk to me, you know. And it just seemed like all he needed was someone to spend some time with him, you know. And sort of when it happened, it made me feel bad because I felt like I should have spent more time with him. We had tried to get, at Doolittle, tried to get some help for him, you know, and unfortunately we weren't able to get it for him in time enough.
All right, thank you.
A few days later, playing video games at Lloyd's house with some of Lloyd's little buddies from the neighborhood.
This is Lloyd Newman here with
Antonio Anderson,
Clinton Bradwell.
We told Antonio and Clinton about our documentary, and Antonio told us he was playing with Eric right before he got murdered.
I was with him.
I hear that if kids witness a tragedy like this in suburban communities, they bring in the counselors and social workers and psychiatrists. Not here.
In the Ida B. Wells, we get to deal with murder by ourselves.
Almost every kid around here has seen someone get shot, a lot of times with someone in their family. We talk about murder like we talk about last night's Bulls game, if we talk about it at all.
Yeah, we was hanging out together, but I ain't go upstairs with them. I stayed downstairs because I thought they was going to take them off somebody's house. That's why I stayed downstairs.
When they asked him to go to the 14th floor, Eric didn't know what was going to happen, did you?
Nope.
So you just with him
right
before it happened?
Yeah, I was outside.
See, you saw him falling out the air?
Yeah.
Let me talk.
That's Clinton.
If he saw Aaron Moore fall through, he should have ran over there and called him. Dummy.
How he go catch somebody falling for 14 stories?
He still would have called me. He still could have called him and fell. I would have called him. And then if we would have called him, his mother wouldn't believe that he fell out the 14th floor window.
Did you see the body?
Mm-hmm. He had blood on it.
Was he alive?
Nope. It was dead.
Thank you very much.
Over and over, me and Leala would come back to the place where Eric died.
The spot, just a patch of dirt, is exactly halfway between our two houses.
You standing where somebody got killed, man. I mean, that's like walking over a graveyard over here, ain't it?
Why make you feel different standing right here?
It do, man. You just...
Yeah, why though? You ain't standing on this grave or nothing. You just standing on grass. It happened right here. But it ain't right here.
That's like Indian burial ground, homie. You ain't gonna never catch no Indian walking over another Indian grave where he died or whatever, man. I mean, you never know. Shorty Soul could be looking at us not doing a story on him.
It's standing at the side, a little boy walks up.
He tells us he wants to talk.
Excuse me, what is your name?
Antonio Johns.
What is your relationship to Eric Morse?
He my cousin.
How does it make you feel that your cousin is gone?
Make me feel bad. I cry every night when I go to sleep.
What are some of the things that you miss about your cousin?
I miss how he used to play with me. He was my best as well.
That's cousin, huh? What did you do when you first heard that your cousin was dead?
I started crying.
How long did you cry after Eric died?
About 9 days.
What made you stop crying about him?
I just stopped watching the news and I stopped crying.
How old are you?
10.
You know the guys that did it?
Yeah. And he go to our school too. And I beat him up about 5 times.
You beat him up for what?
For killing my cousin.
What school do you go to?
Doolittle.
How do they look at you when they say, find out you Eric Morse's cousin?
And they started picking on me, so I beat them up.
So you just beat up everybody?
Yep, they all was talking about.
Antonio's wearing a dirty jacket and skull cap. He's short, dark-skinned, and young-looking for his age.
You notice where your cousin fell?
That was blood right there.
Where?
Come show us where his blood is.
Right there, under that window.
You think you could just stay right here for about 15 minutes and just think of Eric?
Nope.
Why?
I don't want to.
You'll be ready to leave, won't you?
I'd be ready to cry.
You'll be thinking about
it. I'm going to start crying and then I'm going to start swinging.
But you think violence going to bring Eric back?
No, he ain't coming back.
Antonio tells us that he knows where we can find someone else who's involved in the case. A boy named Casanova, the younger brother of Tyrone, the 11-year-old involved in the death of Eric Morse. They're in the same class at Doolittle.
Did you see Casanova in school?
Yeah, I beat him up today.
Antonio walks with us to another part of the Otterby Wells to find Tyrone's little brother.
Casanova!
We found Casanova playing in the parking lot with his baby cousin.
Fast. Come on, Joe. I ain't gonna touch you.
What? I'm gonna touch you. What's your name?
Casanova.
How old is you?
9.
Casanova is small looking for his age. He has plugs in his hair, patches of bald spots on his head from trying to give himself a haircut.
You know what your brother did?
Nope.
Out the window.
Shawty know everything.
That's Casanova's baby cousin.
You know what your cousin did?
Throw that little boy out the window.
How old is you?
5.
They the same age.
Man,
he ain't throw him out the window. No, this is not shop. At first, my brother shouldn't throw him out the window. Then my brother...
Casanova says that at first, his brother Tyrone was going to throw Eric out of the window. Then Johnny, the 10-year-old, told Eric to look at some cats that were having a cat fight downstairs and got him to stand up on the windowsill. And then Johnny just pushed him out of the window. Eric fell. His shirt was up over his head.
His shirt was up over his head. That's how it went.
You think you're going to be like your brother?
Nope.
Why?
Because I ain't bad.
That's weird. You still out of Jules.
Jules is the neighborhood supermarket. The same supermarket Casanova's brother tried to get Eric to steal from.
What you take out of Jules?
Candy.
What you steal for? What you steal for?
Because I'll be hungry.
Did you ever steal with your big brother?
Nope.
Why?
Because my brother didn't like me hanging with him.
You did? How old was your brother?
13.
How old is you?
Nah.
All right, little Casanova.
All right, shorty.
All right, shorty.
1 week later, April 20th, 1995, at the Hill Correctional Center in Galesburg, Illinois, a 3-hour drive from Chicago. Visiting Tommy Jenkins, the father of Casanova, the little boy we just met, and Tyrone, the 11-year-old involved in the murder of Eric Morse.
Tommy Jenkins is serving an 8-year sentence for aggravated battery.
We interviewed him in a prison visiting room.
Tommy
Jenkins is short, muscular, and dark-skinned. I've heard that you can see the sun in every father. Since we weren't allowed to meet Tyrone, we figured Tommy was the next best thing.
Where were you when you found out that someone was killed in your community?
I was in Stateville. You know, and I heard it on the radio, you know, about me and my son being real tight. You know, when you close to somebody, you get a feeling. And when I heard it over the radio, you just had this premonition, you know. But when we come off lockup, and I talked to his mother. She was crying on the phone. But I already knew, you know, it's just that feeling, that gut feeling that you have, right?
We asked Tommy to describe Tyrone for us.
Warm. He's sensitive, he's understanding, he's kind-hearted.
Do you feel that your absence led to the
the alleged incident?
Yes, it did. Because when a father and his child separated, a child has the tendency to take the wrong route in life. And that happens to us all. You hang with the wrong people, some eventually gonna happen. And that's eventually what happened.
Before Tommy got arrested, Tyrone was doing okay in school and staying out of trouble. Once Tommy got locked up, Tyrone got lost. He started failing out, fighting like crazy and doing petty crimes. Then this, a crime Tommy still can't believe was committed on purpose by the same boy he left behind.
What happened, it was just dumb. Kids doing dumb stuff. You know, it's not like they wouldn't have got a gun and shot somebody deliberately. It was not like that. This was kids doing dumb stuff.
What would you say to either one of your sons if you could see them right now?
That I love them, and no matter what happened, I'm there for you. So, you know, just take it one step at a time, you know, because I'm always going to be there for them, you know, no matter what happened, you know, no matter what happened.
This is Lee Allen Jones.
Louie Noon.
We're signing off. Peace.
For months, we tried to find the family of the 10-year-old boy involved in the crime, Johnny. We heard that the family moved out of the Ida B. Wells right after the incident into Johnny's sister's apartment, but didn't know where to find them until someone told us where they were staying, in a project on the west side of Chicago. When we walked in the building, we saw an old friend hanging out at the security desk, Little Wade.
What's up, Little Wade?
What's up, Little Wade?
We thought nothing of it until we asked the security guard where we could find Johnny's sister.
You mind, Rankin?
That's my sister.
It is.
What's up, Wade?
Johnny, the 10-year-old killer, was our friend's little brother. Me and Little Wade used to play baseball together, and I remember the little boy he used to bring with him to the games, Johnny.
That's your little brother?
Yeah.
Man, what happened, man?
I don't know.
Little Wade took us up to his sister's apartment.
I'm Deanna Jones, but not from Public Radio.
Well, that's my brother, and I ain't talking about him. Go on, get out.
The rest of the family wouldn't talk to us, so we interviewed Little Wade outside his apartment.
Talked to him in the crowded hallway in the projects with about six little kids around, man. That's why it's so noisy.
Who's he?
My nephew.
How old are you?
Five. Oh, six.
What's your name?
Emmanuel.
What grade you in?
Kindergarten.
Kindergarten. Five. You miss your uncle?
Yeah. I miss him. He's fucking with his uncle.
No, he don't.
He do.
The kids ran up and down the hallway, and we talked to Little Wade about his brother, Johnny.
You know, what were some fun things that you remember about your little brother?
He used to help me fight. I used to help him fight. Do everything with each other and stuff.
You ever shed tears about your little brother?
No.
Why not?
Because I just get that off my mind.
You just going to keep living your life?
Yeah.
Sister just said she doesn't want y'all in her apartment, so y'all have to leave her apartment.
Johnny's sister called Nation of Islam security on us.
So we wrapped up the interview and walked out.
I always knew when I started this story I was going to know some of the faces involved, but I didn't expect this. I couldn't believe I actually knew this little boy who committed the murder. Just a shy, scrawny, light-skinned boy, no different than any other kid in the neighborhood, just exposed to too much, too young, and he exploded.
It's closer than I imagined. Closer than I goddamn imagined.
Our final interview.
October 1995.
We waited 8 months to speak to Tony Morris, Eric's mother, and Derek, Eric's brother,
who was with Eric when he got thrown out the window.
We met them at their attorney's office, who told her that out of all the requests from across the country, this was the only interview Tony Morris was granted to anyone in the media. We weren't allowed to ask about the incident specifically, but we wanted to learn something about Eric.
From Tony and Derek.
Today we're here with Tony Morris and Derek Lemon, the half-brother of Eric Morris and the mother of Eric Morris. Hello.
How you doing?
Fine. First, I want to say thank you from my heart for you agreeing to do this interview with us. I'm just thankful. What is one of your fondest memories, Eric, that just, you know, just doesn't leave your mind?
tell a lot of jokes.
He was a joker?
Yes, he was. Kept me laughing. She's always say little humorous things. I always think about him every day. So he kept me smiling and laughing. And that just keep me going on in life by thinking about him all the time.
Just Mrs. LeBut. Oh. I know you love your son very much. I can see that now, you know. Do you feel any animosity toward the parents of the young man for allowing them to do such a thing?
I just feel sorry for them. We're not raising their kids like that. There'd be something wrong with anybody to do something like that.
What kind of future do you think the little children will have?
Not very much of a future.
How do you feel toward the young man that did this?
Pat.
Derek, who's in the fourth grade now, wears a big Chicago Bulls shirt and has a shy smile and twinkly eyes.
I can imagine him running down the 14 stories to try to catch Eric before he hit the ground.
If you had one more day to spend with your brother, what would you do?
Go swimming and play with him a lot.
Where do you feel your brother is at now?
In heaven.
He's still your little brother, your big brother, because he's high up.
Little.
Still your little brother, huh? Another name is Morris. How do you think Derek's life's changed since the incident?
He do a lot of fighting now. Something he ain't never did. Tell him you rebellious, you like to fight peoples now.
Fight. Sell crayons.
You get your anger out by fight.
Sometimes.
And maybe he's lashing out. Maybe, I don't know, the problem he's lashing out, because at the time he wouldn't fight, him or Eric. They would run from people.
Does he ever talk about his brother a lot?
Of course he do. We always talk about him. I want him to talk about him for the rest of his life.
You had one more thing to say to Eric. What would it be?
That I love him and I miss him.
Forever and always, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Nice meeting you, Linda.
Thank you, too.
You pour it all the way.
So now it's me and Leal. Back to our lives.
Johnny and Tyrone were convicted of murder in November. In January, they became the youngest kids in the nation ever sentenced to prison. Before this, the maximum sentence in Illinois for children younger than 13 was parole and counseling. After the death of Eric Morse, the law was changed so that kids as young as 10 can be sent to the state juvenile penitentiary, where they'll probably stay locked up until they're 21. Then they'll come back for another tour of duty in this war zone we call home. It's a tragedy to me, because I know with a little bit more love and guidance and hope, they would have turned out more like us.
And without it, we would have turned out more like them.
After all our interviews, we still can't give you the answers, but we do know this. No one should be surprised that this happened, and everyone should know that this will happen again. And the victims and their assailants will keep getting younger and younger. Because around here, children are growing up with absolutely nothing. Nothing to do, nothing to hope for, and nothing to lose.
There's only so much a kid could take.
A lot of things that happen in this neighborhood are senseless, and I can't make too much sense out of the death of Eric Morse. All I can do is hope. Hope that the silencing of this 1 5-year-old child might get people to listen a little more closely to the rest of our voices and understand a little more about the realities we face every day. There's plenty of remorse to go around in our neighborhood, plenty of tragedy to consider, but we try not to think about it too much.
Could make you crazy.
We just keep looking forward, going about our business as best we can. It's how we survive, growing up in the ghetto.
We're going here to the crib and cut off. I'll be over there.
All right, see you.
This is Lee Allen Jones.
And Lloyd Newman. Peace.